When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Appreciate you sitting in with me, and thus far, been some good stuff, talking a little NFL, talking some college basketball, which is in deep, deep doo-doo right now. But now it's time for some college football.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, man. We're going to also have Brett McMurphy come up later in the hour to talk some football as well. He's college football insider, and see how everything that's occurring currently with college basketball, how that could may affect college football. We mentioned that Bobby Petrino there in Louisville may be looking for a way out after the guy who gave him a second chance there with the Cardinals.
When Bobby Petrino is looking for a way out, you know you've ruined and soiled your reputation forever. You guys are dirty around here. I got to get out of here.
Last time he was looking for a way out was when he was a head coach of the Falcons, and he just left.
Yeah.
He didn't have to look for long.
Petrino's fueling up his motorcycle as we speak.
He should probably stay off of motorbikes. How about that, dog? Didn't go so well the last time he was on one. But some good games this week. We have Georgia-Tennessee. Now, Tennessee,
I like that game.
Not playing that well last week versus UMass. Wasn't a stellar performance.
But it's in Knoxville.
It's in Knoxville. They lack passion, energy. Talked to Butch Jones, their head coach, last night on Inside College Football over on CBS Sports Network. And he, and I'm sure everyone would agree, that the team will showcase better passion and energy, or they're going to really get embarrassed by this Georgia team that just clobbered Mississippi State after Mississippi State clobbered LSU. And they shut down Nick Fitzgerald, a guy who's been averaging about 260 total yards of offense. He's averaged 4 touchdowns per game coming into this one, and he only amassed 130 and no touchdowns in that beatdown they took from Georgia. But Tennessee, I'm not so sure Quentin Dormady can be that dual threat guy they want him to be. They got some RPOs in this offense. Larry Scott, the new OC there at Tennessee. I think they just need to go with what he is. His skill set is a conventional drop back passer. You got to dial up those type of plays.
I think that's a good idea as well. This one is interesting to me, not because Tennessee is as good as Georgia. They're not, except Georgia has the reputation forever of losing in a big spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgia is so talented. I've spoken to some people around college football, and they said, you know, Georgia's the one team in the SEC that man-to-man talent-wise can match up against Alabama. Now,
yeah,
they're not there from a program development standpoint. They haven't played in those SEC championship games yet. Kirby Smart hasn't obviously been there very long. But from a talent standpoint, they've got all the pieces. If Georgia plays to its potential, it should not only win this game by 2 or 3 touchdowns, it should beat almost everybody in its schedule by 2 or 3
right.
touchdowns. It should be the beast of the SEC East. But Georgia will always have that stigma of you haven't done it until you do it.
Right.
And I think about Clemson. Dabo inherited the same type of situation. Clemson always lost in a big spot. But Dabo ripped up that narrative and said, you know, look at our games against top 25. Look at our games against top 5. Look at our playoff and bowl. And he kind of shredded that idea
right.
so that we couldn't talk about it anymore and kept pointing to those big wins. But then, of course, when you go to the college football playoff and win a championship, it's a whole different story.
Right.
Georgia's trying to get to what Dabo was doing 3 or 4 years ago at Clemson, and this is a good spot for them to prove that they can do it.
This is a great spot, and I think Georgia, defensively speaking, and I said this Tuesday on Inside College Football, they are Bama defense East.
Yeah.
Because the way they swarm you, the way they run
so
around, the
athletic.
Way they strike you.
Oh.
Yeah. Roquan Smith at linebacker, Lorenzo Carter at linebacker, Bellamy at linebacker, that secondary, Aaron Davis. These guys, the big boys up front, Trent Thompson and Ledbetter, they fly around, they hit you in the mouth. So that defense is similar, very similar, and it resembles what Kirby Smart led there at Alabama on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, Jake Fromm doesn't play like a freshman. This guy, I think, started the game the other night, 8 for 8. Of course, the first play of the game, he throws that fleece flea flicker pass to Terry Godwin. So he has that moxie and that confidence that you want in your quarterback, and it just comes wrapped in a freshman package, but he doesn't play like one. So I think they're getting their Chubb and Michelle, this running game. They have been stellar. So I agree. They have stubbed their toe in years past. Just when you started to believe in Georgia, they'd go into a game like this that they should win by double digits, and they would lose. On the flip side, Tennessee struggling on their offensive line. John Kelly is a beast, though.
Awesome.
This guy is tremendous.
Awesome.
He's a superstar.
He's
going to
play on Sundays.
Oh, he's definitely going to play three down back.
Yeah.
And they use him in that passing game. But some other guys need to emerge as stars. That offensive line needs to protect better. I don't see him doing that this week. Defensively, they've got some holes there because of injuries once again. So this is going to be a tough one for Tennessee. And now, you know, the faithful there in Knoxville are getting a little impatient with Butch Jones, but he just can't keep a healthy team. Last year, all the attrition after the miracle comebacks they had early in the season, and then they just started going down like flies.
This was one of the games of the year last year in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Remember, that was Jacob Eason. Ooh. I mean, just throwing that dart, touchdown. Oh, my goodness, Georgia's going to win at home between the hedges. And then Tennessee comes back and gets the miracle as well.
So Jawan this game, Jennings.
Yeah, last year this was an amazing game. I think that Butch Jones is a good coach, not a great coach, and probably perfect for where Tennessee needed to be after Derek Dooley, after Lane Kiffin, to just get respectable again. I mean, he's mm-hmm. won 9 games the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But is Tennessee going to win the SEC East? No. And the issue is that at this point now, Tennessee fans expect to get back to the Georgia Dome. Now, Mercedes-Benz. They've got to get back to Atlanta. So I think that Butch, yeah, this is tough because he could end up going through the season and actually overachieve maybe with 8 wins or 9 wins. But he's always going to be under pressure because, once again, they're not going to be the best team on that side of the SEC. And the SEC East has been up for the taking the last 3 years.
Thank you.
And Tennessee has not been able to capitalize on it.
Right. And the reason that people are very impatient is that fact right there. The SEC East has not... It couldn't hold a candle to the West.
Yeah.
And so it's been ripe for picking, and Tennessee hadn't been able to do that. You've seen a Florida team with just a listless offense, dynamite defense, win back-to-back SEC championships. And so
Mizzou
Tennessee
won one.
Mizzou won a couple.
Two of
them. Yeah, exactly. And so for Tennessee not to be in that number, I think this is Bush's fourth to fifth year there at Tennessee. So you get that late into your tenure at the school, and you still don't have a SEC appearance, not a championship, not even an appearance in the SEC championship game. People are going to become
last
highly
year
impatient.
Needed to be that year they got to Atlanta because that was their best team.
Yeah, I agree. Then they just the injuries befell this football team, and of course we know what happened after that. You mentioned Clemson, another big ball game. Clemson going on the road to Vatek. They've already knocked off Auburn. They
huge
went on the road and beat Lamar Jackson and Louisville, and now Vatek. I like Clemson in this one. I think it's going to be a close one. Vatek has some injuries in that secondary. They may be playing a lot of young guys back there, and Kelly Bryant has been he's been a great player thus far. You look at his passing numbers, maybe not so much. 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, but 7 rushing touchdowns. This guy, it doesn't look too big for him, just like it doesn't look too big for Jake Fromm, but he's a junior, redshirt junior, taking over for the great Deshaun Watson. But that defense for Clemson, that's what sets them apart. 16 or 17 sacks in the big ball games versus Auburn versus Louisville.
It's interesting because Clemson should win this game by a touchdown. They're that much better than almost everybody else in the nation outside of Alabama. And so Virginia Tech's a good team. They're a top 15 team. Clemson should win. That's what they're favored by, 7.5. But when you go to Lane Stadium at night, national TV, weird things have always happened. I mean, Frank Beamer made a career on the upset of the big boy in the Big East or the ACC coming into Lane Stadium on a Thursday night or a Saturday night and popping them. And Clemson is an elite defense. But Justin Fuente has an ability to get the most out of his guys on Saturdays, even if they're not as talented as the opponent. So I think it's going to be a really good game. And you know, for Clemson, Dexter Lawrence and those guys on defense.
Christian Wilkins.
It's amazing that Clemson has always been about offensive playmakers. It was always about C.J. Spiller and Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins. And now that defense, probably has 5 or 6 NFL players.
Listen,
on it.
Since I've been watching Clemson, it seems like they've always had great defensive linemen. They've always churned those guys out, and those terrific wide receivers and running backs as well. But the D linemen, it seems like that's always been a mainstay at Clemson. And I don't know how to. It's like they're like Clemson to and D linemen are like Georgia and running backs.
Yeah.
I think they just grow them. They got some fertilizer they sprinkle, and boom. Here's another defensive end or defensive tackle that's going to transition to the next level. Josh Jackson is quarterback there at Vautech, the freshman quarterback. He has played fairly well this year. Cam Phillips has been his main target, 11 touchdowns. 5 of those have gone to the wide receiver, Cam Phillips. But the thing that I like about this Vitek team, they're running the ball. They're averaging over 200 yards a game rushing. They haven't done that since 2009. So they're going to have some balance on offense to take the heat off of this quarterback. But good luck with that going up against this defense. A big one tonight, USC going up against the number one defense in the Pac-12, Washington State.
Yeah, how is it possible Mike Leach has the number Pac-12? The Pirate.
The Pirate has the number one defense. And watch this guy, Hercules Mata'afa. He leads them in tackles for loss. He's a damn good player out there on the edge for Washington State. But USC hadn't been running the rock like they did in the first couple of ball games versus my Longhorns. They only had 71 yards rushing. Last week they were just over 100 versus Cal, and they won the turnover battle 6-2 versus Cal because that game was tight. It was tied, I believe, at halftime, and then they were able to separate from them. Darnold has thrown a pick in each game. He had doubled up on him, but he only threw one last week. So let's see if he can get right going up against this number one defense and the number 12 pass defense in all the land. And Luke Falk, some are saying he's the better quarterback in this matchup.
This is upset alert because Washington State at home, Wazoo, has a defense that can hang. Okay, mm-hmm. It should keep it close. Number two, Luke Falk is a veteran quarterback. He's been under Mike Leach's system for a while now. They throw it all over the lot. And I think that USC has looked largely very inconsistent in every game they've played. Sam Darnold would look great for 3 drives and then look like dog food for 3 drives.
Yeah.
And USC's offense is about him. Washington State hasn't lost yet. They're a top 20 team as well. They're at home, national TV, and they've got a quarterback and a defense. I think Wazoo can pull the upset tonight, and I worry sometimes about USC being completely focused on the task at hand for 3 hours on Saturday.
I am taking the upset as well, and I think SC be on upset notice. And matter of fact, the last time they lost a game, because they've won now 13 straight, last time they lost was September 23rd, 24th, I believe, and that was at Utah. Darnold's first start. Should have won that ball game. Had 3 crucial turnovers in that one, and so it's been well over a year since they lost a ball game, and I think they should be on notice going up there to Pullman where
no doubt
all kinds of crazy stuff happens. Another game we mentioned Mississippi State, the beatdown they took, but going to Auburn, let's see if they can right the ship. I like this Auburn defense. They didn't play so well. Well, the offense definitely didn't versus Mercer 2 weeks ago, but last week they did what you should do and what everyone's doing now to Missouri. That team is just in a bad
awful
state currently, and everyone's beating up on them. But we'll see if Nick Fitzgerald can get back on the right track, and Aris Williams at the running back position going up against a very tough and legitimate defense there at Auburn. Remember, they held Clemson to only 14 points. Their offense didn't give them any help in that ball game, allowing 11 sacks.
Yeah, I still don't know what we got in Mississippi State because they looked so good against LSU, and you said, mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mississippi State, all right, they're legit. I mean, they just blew out the Tigers by 30 points, and yet they weren't supposed to do much coming into the season and then didn't look good last week as well. And I almost wonder, was that just one really good night where it all came together and they blew the doors off LSU? Auburn's the better football team here. They're at home and they're on the plains. And Auburn's defense is very, very good, as you said. They're athletic. They're fast. They get around. If Auburn is legitimate as the second best team of the SEC West and maybe the SEC altogether, they've got to avoid matchups like this where they stub their toe because they need to make sure they stack their wins for the Iron Bowl.
Right.
If they are a game or two behind Alabama for the Iron Bowl, then it sucks all that juice out of it. They've got to make sure they go toe-to-toe each and every week. They can afford one loss, obviously, but they can't afford two. And they've got Georgia later on in the season, Veterans Day weekend.
Yeah.
So that's a huge matchup. So this is one of those games where Auburn can't take their foot off the gas.
I would agree with that. Now, you said you had something to say about my – the head coach at my alma mater. The Longhorns won last night, 17-7 final score. They're in Ames, as I mentioned, as we were going to break, the last time they ventured into Jack Trice Stadium, they left a goose egg up on the scoreboard. How about Jack Trice Stadium? And I think I wasn't aware of this until early in the week, and then they discussed this on the broadcast last night. Steve Levy, and I believe it was Brian Greasy with him. Jack Trice Stadium, the only stadium in college football, or any stadium for that matter, I believe, that's named after a black person.
No, really?
Yeah, because Joe Louis Arena, is that still up? I know they have a new arena there in Detroit.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know.
But in college football land, the only stadium named after a black person is Jack Trice Stadium. And Jack Trice played there and died from football injuries he sustained way back, I think it was 1920, 1930 when he played there at Iowa State.
It's a great fact.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised, but interesting nugget there. But your thoughts on Tom Herman?
Well, I think he's the beneficiary of so much dirty work and grunt work that Charlie Strong had done. Charlie Strong had wiped clean the mess that had been left under Mac Brown, and it took him years to finally get it back. He finally started recruiting the type of players he wanted. They lost to Kansas last year. They didn't turn the corner as dramatically as people wanted, and so, okay, I couldn't defend Charlie anymore after the Kansas loss. However, I thought if you gave him this year, Charlie would win with these guys. Tom Herman steps in, I think, to a perfect situation where the expectations aren't high. He's got a long leash, but he's got a steady, good foundation of a team. In a Big 12, let's face it, where Oklahoma and Oklahoma State might be the cream of the crop, but they still have their issues as well, specifically on defense. So last night for Herman to go to Iowa State, and yes, it's on the road, conference games on the road, national TV will be tough. But Texas can't be beating Iowa State by 10 points. They can't be putting up only a field goal in the entire second half. Texas has too many athletes and too much talent to have to struggle with Iowa State. Now, look, granted, the Cyclones are getting a little bit better, but that is arguably the worst or second worst Power Five job in America. Kansas might be the worst. Okay. Baylor's tough as well, but at least you're in Texas. You know, Boston College, Syracuse, not great as well. Northwestern is tough, although they're winning. Cal, but you know, when you look at Iowa State, that might be the single worst job at a Power Five conference. and you're Texas, and you're struggling with the Cyclones?
Listen, Matt Campbell has those guys playing hard. They were in a huge fight with Iowa early in the season.
They
probably should have won that ball game, but didn't. And they've got some good recruits, and that Park kid who starts at quarterback, former Georgia player, or at least was on the roster. I don't know if he never saw the field, and he transferred from Georgia. So they're getting some solid recruits in there. And Paul Rose, remember when he was there, he had them turning and trending the right direction until they weren't. So Texas, still a lot of young players, not to make excuses, but the offense didn't look great there in that ball game. They lost three of their best blockers on the offensive line. Of course, Connor Williams being the biggest one at the tackle position, Elijah Rodriguez and Andrew Beckett at tight end. Defensively, I think they're coming into their own. They are flying around. They're hitting people like it's no one's business. So they're getting there on that side of the ball. But they don't have enough offense currently to compete in the Big 12 for a Big 12 title. So I'm in agreement there.
And Herman had to really empty out the playbook against USC to keep that thing close. And he was trying everything. I mean, every trick play he got, every shift in the formation. So he's trying to be creative, which I appreciate, but it's just tough because I thought that Texas was poised if they kept Charlie Strong for this year to be a really good year. And they're 2-2, and we know what happened against Maryland. They lost a tough game against USC, so I give them credit there. But last night, it doesn't feel like a win when you go to Iowa State and only put up a field goal in the second half.
No, I'm with you. I would agree. They've got to come up with something on that offense. And I don't think Shane Buechele is a guy. We were just talking about Quentin Dormady there at Tennessee running the RPOs. Shane Buechele, where he's a little bit more athletic than Dormady, his body's so fragile. He was beaten up last night. So it'll be interesting to see the injury report this week as they get ready for Kansas State, a very physical football team that has owned Texas since Texas joined the Big 12. And so that's going to be I think it'll be dicey as to whether or not he plays in this one. Ellinger, the freshman, a lot more athletic and more adept at running the ball as a quarterback than Shane Bouchel, but they wanted to go with the guy who has a lot more games under his belt. And you know, he played okay, had a pick, throwing back across his body in the middle of the field, but he's not as athletic as his backup. D.A. sitting in for G.O. here on G.O. and Jones. We're on the tugboat, not the mothership.
Hong Kong.
We'll be right back with some more sports for you folks.
Keep up with the latest on the show on Twitter at G.O. and Jones.
Dover International Speedway, the track is nicknamed the Monster Mile, was built in 1969. I'm 1 year old. Boy, do that again. Come on. That's music to my ears, D.A., man. That get me. That makes me moist. Who do I like? I'm going to give you two, Bogus. Two. That's it. Two.
How'd you do last week?
I won. I win every week. Mm. No, I didn't win last week. Kyle Busch won, I believe, that the race last week.
One of them did.
Didn't he win? Yeah, Kyle won.
He won twice.
He won the Infinity race. He don't know. Anyway, Kyle Busch is my favorite, and Brad Keselowski is my favorite as well. For this one, Advance Auto Parts introduces Speed Perks. Spend $100, get 20 off your next qualified purchase. No cards to carry. No points to keep track of. No nonsense. And make sure you, when you go to the race, take your Confederate flag.
Oh, there it is.
That is not outlawed, but if you dare speak out against America in any manner and is it perceived as offending the American flag, you're not allowed. But that Confederate flag, bring that all you want. It doesn't denote hatred. That's heritage.
Hey, just as a pro tip for the next time you're in charge, I would take a beat.
Didn't I take a beat?
Let some air between the sponsored read and then the soapbox.
Well, you know,
just thinking out loud.
That's why they don't let me do it. There you go, right there. Mm-hmm.
That's what happens with a tugboat.
I think there's
just anything. Anything goes.
No rules on tugboat.
I think there's a beat
we're in international
there.
Waters, so there's no
Mikey
loss.
B is great at splicing stuff. He can find a beat in there. You got this, Mike, right?
Oh, yeah.
We'll let Pete edit it and see what happens.
Pete's going to leave it in there. I want y'all to get him. Get him.
Yeah, it'll be in there.
Oh, my bad. You know, in my haste to take a shot at Richard Childress, car owner NASCAR, and Richard Petty, their asinine comments. Yeah, so my bad.
Junior's gotten a little loose, though, on social media.
Junior pushed back. And it's interesting. I'm a huge NASCAR fan, and when I had a lot more time on my hands, I would watch each and every race. And I recall back in early 2000s, Fox, during their race broadcast, they would have a little segment, 10 laps with a driver, and Junior said this, and I think it was lost on a lot of people. He said, and they asked him, you know, things that people may not know about you, and one of the things he said was how annoyed I am when people come up to me and say racist things. That was one of his comments during that 10 laps with the driver. So he is a guy that has always been more than open to share his thoughts on racial issues. At least in that little segment, he definitely did. And I was taken aback. I didn't really want the Junior just say that. And he did. And he did provide some pushback to the comments by Richard Childress and Richard Petty this past week as well. So good for him, even though he roots for the wrong football team, Washington Redskins, but good for him.
That's kind of interesting. Do you think he would be open about pushing back on NASCAR if he wasn't retiring? I guess he has enough stature now to.
Yeah, I think he would. He would also do it if he hadn't. If he wasn't hanging up his helmet and his race suit, I think he would still. Let's get him on the show and ask him, Mikey B. See if we can get him on here and get him to expound on his comments.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously really rare because so much of NASCAR's your stability is because of sponsors. You're so tied. You have such a financial interest. It's not like if you just go out there as your football player, you're employed by the team. If you score your touchdowns or do your job, you know, in a lot of ways, everything will be ignored because you're employed by the team. But in NASCAR, it's so much about sponsorship money.
Oh, that I think everything.
That's why they're so worried about you know, that type of pushback.
Right.
And so it could mean money drying up. So that's a significant piece of this puzzle. But for Junior, who was the most popular driver on the circuit for years.
Year in and year out.
Maybe he had built up enough cachet to where he could, you know, kind of politically say whatever he wanted. I don't know.
True.
But it's interesting.
You're right. The fact that he is retiring may play a part into this, but having just shared with you that little tidbit from way back when he mentioned that, I don't think it has as much to do with him being outspoken as we might think it does. Andrew Bogish is back. Bogish, give us an update, buddy.
Sure, Brian. So after turnover
number two,
Tony Romo began speculating about a Bears QB change last night on CBS, but Mike Glennon played all of Thursday Night Football Lambeau, even after giveaway
number four.
Number one thing we obviously have to fix is the turnovers, because, you know, I'm not giving our team a chance when you turn the ball over like that.
The Packers scored 21 points off those turnovers, coasting to a 35-14 win. Four touchdown passes from Aaron Rodgers. For the first time since 1933, his Packers lead the all-time series with the Bears, now 95-94 with six ties. Running back Ty Montgomery and wideout Davante Adams, the newest names on the Packers' long injury list. Montgomery might have broken ribs in the first quarter. Adams took a nasty helmet-to-helmet.
I don't think I hit him in the helmet, but, you know, I leave that up to those guys.
Yeah, us guys,
I don't
you
think
did.
I hit him in the helmet?
Yeah. Okay.
How could you miss that one? You actually, your face smashed into his face.
Wow.
I didn't think I hit him.
Is the face mask not your helmet? Is that?
My God. I mean, you know, it's one thing to want the league to go soft on you. It's another thing to be Rick Pitino and just openly lie about what had just happened.
I'm shocked. I am shocked and amazed that my helmet made contact with his helmet. I don't know how I got there.
Yeah. I think it was my elbow.
At this point, blame it on somebody else.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure that was like Mike Singletary that hit him.
Yeah.
Like, just shift blame completely off myself.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was Brian Urlacher. Adams, oh, I'm sorry. He retired.
Yeah. Adams left the field on a stretcher, but was alerted. Had a feeling in all extremities. He went to the hospital for evaluation. Denver Bronco players released a statement yesterday to say they will stand for the national anthem this weekend after a majority vote in the locker room. This morning, Drew Brees said his Saints will kneel before the anthem but stand for it Sunday at Wembley Stadium. The NBA instituting rules to limit resting players if teams do it for marquee national TV games. They could be fined $100,000. Multiple players should not be rested for the same game. Players should not be rested on the road. And when players do get a night off, they should be visible in the arena for fan interaction.
This is fascinating because how are you going to fine Greg Popovich if he says Kawhi Leonard has a sprained ankle?
Right.
You can't.
No.
And so that's just what's going to happen. They're just going to fake the injury report for all these guys.
And I actually think the thing that sticks out the most in all of this is you can't rest like multiple guys in one game. Why wouldn't you just get it done with? Like, if you're going to rest guys, because it happens where, you know, Leonard and Parker and Ginobili will set a game. Do it in one crappy game against the Pelicans.
Everybody
and
at
then
that
move
game
on.
Gets screwed.
Well, too bad.
Right. What do you mean too bad?
So I'll give you the don't do it on the road thing, but I'd rather, if I'm going to rest guys, give them one night off and then play your other, you know, 79 games at full strength.
Well, I mean, on the road or at home, what they're trying to do is so that if you are going to buy a ticket, everybody's going, you're going to buy a ticket for the home team, hopefully. When LeBron comes in or the Warriors come in, obviously those are, you are attracted to the road team, but they're largely saying if you put out your product properly as the home team, you are doing your service to the ticket holders. But the problem is there is no way to police injuries.
Right.
So how could you possibly find these? I mean, is Greg Popovich going to go, yeah, screw you, Kawhi Leonard isn't playing, Tony Parker's not playing.
He might, actually. Popovich could.
He might.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, he doesn't have to as long as he says he's dealing with flu-like symptoms. I mean, you could make up anything.
No, I think this and the draft lottery stuff is a waste of time.
Well, the draft lottery, only because it's not going to really prevent
it. Yeah, exactly.
But it's a step in the right direction, I would say, because now, what, four teams all have the same chances of getting
the
number
top
one.
Three.
Okay, the top three. All. So you can't have the number one pick and have, or the worst record and have better odds than anybody else to get the number one pick. So that helps a little bit, I would think.
Yeah, but I think it should just be, there should be no lottery. You should just draft in reverse order, and if you're bad, you're bad, and you deserve, quote-unquote, the first pick.
Well, then that would be tanking.
Yeah, and I'm okay if you...
I guess not.
The only thing you can't do is like lose a game on purpose. You can't be missing shots, throwing the ball out of bounds. You can't do
that. But you could never tell.
But if you have a crappy team, so you hope to only win nine games, or you want to draft the next LeBron, I'm okay with that.
Are you done?
On the tugboat, man. You got these debates.
You have more sports update?
I do.
Okay.
It's frustrating because we had a chance to pick up a game, and you know, now it's three with three to go, and you know, there's still a lot of things that can happen, but it's frustrating.
Yes, if you get Gary Sanchez to get his big ass down on the ground and block some balls, it won't be frustrating.
Say
more pass balls than anybody in the history of baseball.
For Joe Girardi.
God.
Yankees losing at home to the Rays 9-6.
Up 4-1. Four. To
such
one.
It's such a different weekend if the Yankees win last
night. Yes. Seven runs. One inning. Sonny Gray.
He is the San Gino.
Sonny Dark Gray.
It's not always sunny in the Bronx.
Charcoal? What are you going with here?
You need to go to break. We have a guest coming up.
Okay. Back to you.
You done?
Sure, why not? Yankees lost. Yay.
No, shut up, Brett McMurphy, when we come back.
Check us out on Facebook at Gio and Jones.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
College football insider Brett McMurphy. Brett, how you doing? Welcome to CBS Sports Radio, that is, Gio and Jones.
Hey, good morning, guys. Sorry to mess up the groove.
Yeah, I can tell. Hey, Brett, we've been discussing what's going on in the basketball world, that big bombshell that dropped the other day, and wondering if there will be any effect on college football. Of course, Urban Meyer came out and yesterday on a radio show there in Columbus and said, 97.1 The Fan, I believe it was, in Columbus, and said that he thinks anyone that lies to the NCAA should be out. There shouldn't be no slap on the wrist. You should be done as far as a coach at the NCAA level. What say you? You think that some of this may trickle into college football?
Well, I certainly think it could. Since you have the FBI involved, it's certainly a much different ball game than the NCAA snooping around. You know, I thought it was kind of telling that the U.S. attorney basically said, look, college basketball, we have your playbook. Now, he didn't mention anything about college football, but certainly and I'm sure some of that goes on in college football. The thing is, can you prove it? I do think that it happens more frequently in college basketball, the way that the AAU model is set up in college basketball, although that's starting to trickle into college football with these 7-on-7 leagues, and you've got these 7-on-7 coaches, which is similar to the AAU. I still think, though, that it's not as bad, even close to college basketball. But again, they put out a phone number for people to call if they have information about any other coaches, and certainly they're not going to conduct a 2 or 3 year investigation to get 4 assistant coaches. They're going for the big fish, and those are head coaches. And so whether that creeps over into college football, we will certainly find out. But certainly if any coach, college football, basketball, has been involved in this, you've got to be looking over your shoulder worrying that something gets out, because this isn't simply, well, you know, you're not going to go to a bowl game next year, you could go to jail. So I think we're going to see a lot more names in the coming weeks and coming months, and I would not be surprised if it leaks over to college football, certainly not to the extent of the number of people we're going to see dinged in this in college basketball, though.
And since it's not going to affect college football nearly as deeply as college basketball, do you think that's specifically because the sneaker companies don't have that type of influence in the college football landscape?
Yeah, that's another great example. It hasn't got to that level in college football. I know talking to a lot of college football coaches. In recent years, they have gotten a little bit more frustrated as far as recruiting, because in the past they could deal with the high school coach and the recruit and the parents. And then now you're seeing some of these 7-on-7 coaches kind of be their go-to person as far as recruiting. Well, that's how it is in basketball. I mean, the high school coach is almost totally out of the mix. And you're right. You've got the sneaker companies come in. You don't see that in football. Where guys come in to wear shoes as far as college football recruits or high school players. So I don't think that's as prevalent. But certainly you have instances where players have gotten paid in college football, and it's just now can the FBI prove that? And certainly if they have information, they'll certainly go after go after people because they want to get as many of these individuals as possible.
When you look at college football, and you're right, guys are not walking around in their cleats, so it's more prevalent in basketball. You can wear some sneakers each and every day, LeBron sneakers or Steph Curry's sneakers, and Rick Neuheisel made this point on our show last night. So while it's not as prevalent because the sneakers not there at the forefront and something you can use every day, there are apparel deals, and you have guys coming from different socioeconomic situation. So we've known about this underbelly in college basketball, and it's been well known, and it's really a lot of focus on it now with what's going on at Ole Miss. Do you think there could be any connection there?
You know, I don't think so. And the one thing that you mentioned that kind of jumped out is, you know, you said that we've kind of always known this, and that's why, and I'm not going to name any specific people, but when I hear all these people come out and say, I'm shocked this is going on, I have no idea. And these are people that follow the sport. These are people that cover the sport. These are people that comment on the sport on a daily basis, and they interact with these head coaches on a daily basis and say, I'm shocked that this occurred. I can't believe this happened. You know, get your head out of the sand. Everyone knows this has been going on. I don't want to give the impression that people – then said, well, it's okay, it's going on. I mean, we can debate whether kids should get paid or not. But my point is, in the past, you know, myself and other reporters, you could have information that some of this was going on, but you couldn't get the proof. If you could go to somebody and get them, they would just say, well, no, this didn't happen. So it's a he said, he said story. You can't report that sort of information. But now with the FBI, with the wiretaps and the documents and all the different things they have, then obviously you can prove this stuff. But for anybody to sit there and say, I'm shocked, I can't believe this is going on, we've got to clean this up, they must be very naive to believe this never went on, especially when they're dealing with all these individuals on a daily basis.
Brett McMurphy, College Football Insider, joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. DA filling in for Gio here on Gio and Jones. Which top five team is going on the road this weekend and will have a bigger struggle? USC tonight in Pullman taking on Wazoo, or Clemson on the road at Lane Stadium in Blacksburg tomorrow night?
You know, I think it... Wow, that's a great one. I think... it's weird. I'm going to say USC, but I actually would be less surprised if Clemson lost. But I think because everybody's making such a big deal of USC and how poorly, not how poorly they played, but that we've seen the good, the bad, the ugly from them, excuse me, so far. I mean, they're going to Washington State. Washington State's lost 15 consecutive games against Power Five teams, against consecutive, excuse me, ranked teams at home. So you would think Washington State would have an advantage there, but they simply have not been able to beat a ranked team at home. So you think, obviously, USC is going to circle this game. The other thing is, you know, which Sam Darnold is going to show up? I mean, this is a guy that was the Heisman favorite coming in, and he's not played anything like it. I mean, he's got nearly as many interceptions through four games as he had all of last season. Can he clean that up? I think because of all the attention being brought to this game, USC will somehow survive. But then you look at Clemson, and Clemson has surpassed all expectations, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that. Dabo Sweeney's the only coach in NCAA history to have a team that starts finishes the season ranked higher than they started the season in the AP poll. He's done that six consecutive seasons. They started out the year number five. They're already up to number two. I think what benefits Clemson is because they played so poorly last week against Boston College before waking up in the second half. I think they come out a lot better. And I think Clemson, quite frankly, is the class of the ACC. Now that Florida State's without their starting quarterback, I think there's a huge gap between Clemson and everybody else in the ACC. And for the Pac-12, I actually think Washington will win that league. USC is the only team in the country that plays 12 consecutive weeks without an off week. They don't get a break during the entire season. So will the Trojans slip up somewhere? Maybe this week, maybe somewhere down the road. I don't know, but without question, those are the two marquee games of this weekend.
Brett, are you believing in what Justin Wilcox is building out there at Cal? He wanted to be there. He had been there previously. Sonny Dykes, of course, was looking for a way out, and now Wilcox goes back home to Eugene where he was born. He played for the Ducks. He has to take on a team that is looking pretty good as well, although they lost last week on the road at Arizona State with their new coach, Willie Taggart. But Wilcox looks like he's the man for the job to turn Cal around.
Absolutely, no question. I mean, you know, last year, I can't remember a game if Cal actually played defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's Wilcox especially. And, you know, you look at the game last week against USC. I mean, six turnovers in a 10-point loss. I mean, yeah, you got to take turnovers into consideration, but, teams don't usually turn it over six times. So they very easily could have won that game. They won at North Carolina to open the season. Carolina is a little bit down, but then they did knock off an SEC opponent at home. And Oregon is proven with Willie Taggart. They're a much different team this year. Their offense is off the charts. But Justin Wilcox, I would say right now, Brian, in the month of September, when you look at the best coaching jobs in the nation, I'd put Jeff Brohm at Purdue number one, mm-hmm. and I'd put Justin Wilcox at Cal number two, because what he has done defensively for them has been remarkable. And I don't think before the season anyone had them getting to 4 or 5 wins. I do bowl projections every week at thescore.com, and I've got Cal going to bowl game this year. I think they should easily get 6 wins, but certainly he's going to be tested these next 4 or 5 weeks, because you got USC, Oregon, Washington, and Washington State in consecutive weeks. If they can somehow get a win somewhere in that string of games, that's going to be huge for them. But still, it's certainly, I think, not trending up for the Golden Bears.
Brett McMurphy, College Football Insider. Brett, we appreciate your time, buddy. We're going to get back to partying.
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks,
thanks, my man.
Thanks, Brett.
Brett, good stuff there. I believe Wilcox is the guy for the job, as I stated. He wants to be there, unlike their previous coach. And that's not a knock on Sonny Dykes. He just wanted to go elsewhere. He's a cat from Texas, like me, and
it's a hard job.
Yeah, it is a difficult job.
Cal's a hard job.
I would agree, but they look like they're trending the right direction. We got more football talk coming up, and also a little sound from some guys taking some shots at me, man.
Is that right?
I take offense to that.
Friendly fire?
Yeah, friendly fire.
On the tugboat?
On the tugboat. Little shot across the bow. Gio and Jones coming right back.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.